philosophers in
space, 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 space.
I don't pretend to understand Brannigan's Law. I merely enforce it.
Listen, I'm not the nicest guy in the universe. Because I'm the smartest, and being nice is something stupid people do to hedge their bets.
So, do you know what I'm gonna do before I do it?
Yes.
What if I do something different?
Then I don't know that.
Cool, cool.
I wish I read that book by that wheelchair guy.
Welcome to Philosophers in Space. This is episode 44. I'm Thomas. That's Aaron. How you doing, Aaron?
You ever realize, man, that like everything's really just Mario Kart? Just like trapped in these endless cycles of
specifically
violence,
Mario
anger.
Kart?
Corporate overlords cause us to foolishly believe
this is meaningful
content.
I want to know which
version
of Mario Kart, because if you've ever tried to go back and play SNES Mario Kart, it's incredibly hard to control. The car, like it's just, it's so hard. But like Mario Kart
Classic
64,
Mario Kart.
Now that one. Mm. Now which one? Oh. So which Mario Kart are we stuck in?
64 is the to me,
yeah.
Like the first, the real first Mario Kart, the first important Mario Kart. And then there's, ooh, you know, like
already
Mario
making enemies League. Early in this episode. Okay,
I'm just throwing that gauntlet right down there.
We are continuing to talk about Bandersnatch, but from a different perspective this week. What are we going to be talking about today, Aaron?
Representation of Yoshi in Mario Kart. we're going to talk about representation. I wanted to talk about, get into some issues that I think some people have talked about, actually in a couple of contexts recently with Bird Box as well, that other movie that came out with Sandra Bullock. The issues of representation of individuals with mental illness and the way that Bandersnatch deals with mental illness, and also want to talk a little bit about the way it deals with drug use, both for people with mental illness and drug use in general. And I think this is an important ethical conversation that we need to not just kind of gloss over, because this is, you know, there are ways in which Bandersnatch could have been better that would have been sort of fun, like it would have made it more interesting. But these are ways in which I think it's important that it should be better, that they should be held to a higher standard because it can impact people, right? Sort of, I mean, similar to what we were saying with the quantum immortality stuff, that you could give people the wrong idea about playing around with guns or something because they'll always survive. Like, there are several important events that happen over the course of Bandersnatch that I think that trade on very problematic tropes and reinforce very problematic tropes and convey harmful ideas, I think would be the way to put it. And in a movie that's about conveying harmful ideas, we should be sensitive to that fact.
Nice. Yeah, what we should do is maybe step into a brief exposition zone to set up specifically the plot points that you want to talk about in relation to mental health and drug use kind of thing. So maybe we'll do a quick, it doesn't have to be very long, obviously, because we sort of did the, we did some number of the different versions of the plot last week, but a quick dip into the exposition zone.
You're traveling through another dimension beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
Yeah, there are like a couple of very important choice points that I think are relevant to the topic we want to talk about here. So one of them, and I'm not sure which of these you managed to see, but there is a mediocre ending that you can achieve where your game comes out and it's terrible, and it's achieved. This is all during the step where you either take the drugs or your mental health drugs. You either take the antipsychotics or whatever they are, or you don't take them.
Side note, I got to that. That was the first ending I got to, and it was because I chose poorly. they should have just cut to the guy from Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade several times when I did this game or video. But I had it come out. My first one, I guess, which I think is like a false ending, which is the equivalent of the Goosebumps book with I referenced last week, where you just accidentally choose like certain death right away. It's like, eh, game over. I did one where I was like, yeah, sure, let's sign up right away for this game factory. And then it just comes out and it's terrible. And that was the end.
Well, that one was cool because they kind of trick you into it. And then it gives you a sense of like, because that one goes meta, right? He says, I should try again. And it like breaks the fourth wall. And I think that one is built.
Which was weird. I actually did notice that. And I was putting a pin in it for like, is this going to come into play later? Is the dad going to be aware of some sort of weird timeline hopping he's doing? Because he says to his dad, like, I'm going to go back and. Doesn't he? It's weird.
Yeah, he breaks the fourth wall and then it jumps back. And then when you watch through again, Colin knows who you are and you know what's going to happen ahead of time.
Yeah.
So it does influence the playthrough again on that one. But no, this is a different moment later on is the one I was talking about.
Okay.
Was you go back to the doctor and the doctor tells you to take your meds and then you have a choice to take your meds or to flush them, basically.
My choice was flush your meds or throw away your meds.
Right. Some people don't get a choice, which is problematic in itself, right? That like, A, it's problematic that there are specific important endings that are worth seeing that involve reinforcing the idea that you shouldn't take your medication.
Ah, you're right.
Right?
That's a great
point. That's a problem. The other problem is if you get the option to take your meds, what happens is not only does the game come out and is crappy, but the guy in the reviewer is like, it just felt like the person lost their spirit. And it reinforces the stereotype you need to be off your meds to be a true artist. Right.
Oh, man, you're so right about
that. Just bad.
Yeah, mine didn't give me the option. It was throw them away or flush them. I was like, well, I don't want to do either of those. So I guess I'll save some water and I'll just throw them away. That was how I made that choice. I was like, don't need to waste a flush. I'll just toss them in the trash.
Yeah. I was talking through this stuff with Jeremiah Traeger because we were both like, we really feel like this doesn't. There should have been one person on that set who said, hey, guys, these are not the right plot points that you want to be using. And this is a problem that I talked about a little bit on Embrace the Void as well. Like, there's this in vogue thing of unreliable narrators. I mean, it always comes and goes, but like in the technological age, I think we're seeing a reemergence of what is real played out through unreliable narrators. And mental illness is a really cheap way to get someone to being an unreliable narrator. And so
we're just remaking Fight Club over and over again.
Right. And that brings you to the other main problem in this one, which is the tying together of violence and mental illness. That to get one of the what I think are the full, proper, best endings, you have to kill your father. And that's sort of driving through the idea that, like, again, not only just taking your pills, but that, like, this is part of what it means to be a great artist, right? There's these ideas of, like, great artists going insane because of the quality of their art. And I think that this could have been done differently. There could have been ways to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard because you're doing a tragedy, right? You're doing drama.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, how do you.
That's a problem with all of this. Like, especially tying back with the. Not just the taking the pills and all that, but talking about mental illness in general, you know. That's one of the hard things with the representation thing and not reinforcing. It. When you're making art, which usually has higher stakes and usually, you know, especially if it's something like this, it's usually a tragedy, as you say. It's usually that kind of thing. It's hard to say that, okay, what you have to do is have a guy who has some mental illness but takes his pills and is fine. Then you're like, well, where's the story? But is the answer that could just be another character that is, you know what I mean? Like, how do you fix that in a way that's still interesting and still has a conflict and trouble kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's the hard work of exploring challenges and choice points that don't reinforce sort of these classic tropes about, like, you know, not taking your meds makes you more creative kind of thing. Like, there are ways that you could still center mental illness in these stories, I think, and yet sort of convey different issues, I guess. And I'm not saying that I have all the easy answers, right, for this. Like, that's why I think a lot of people fall back on tropes like this. Even a very brilliant show like Black Mirror still falls into these ruts because it's easy, right? And it's harder to think of a more complex version of this. And I should also say, I read at least one article by someone who has mental illness, who said that they felt like it was a really good representation of what it's like to feel increasingly powerless with regard to your mental illness. And like, they acknowledged some of the problematic parts, but overall thought that it conveyed the scariness of it and various other important pieces. So
it is, I was going to bring this up actually, because I had a very disturbing experience, not from my mental health, although that's not fun sometimes too, but I had an experience where if someone I knew was going through something pretty rough. But anyway, I knew somebody who was going through something. I'm not a doctor. I don't know exactly what it was, but it was very disturbing, and it really sucked. I don't want to go too much into the details, but it is true that what I can tell you for sure is that she felt like her ex-boyfriend was controlling everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she would talk to people, including me. I hadn't talked to her for years, and all of a sudden she started talking to me, you know, out of the blue, just nothing, no context. Started talking to me, you know, and I had no idea what was happening. You know, I hadn't talked to this person in years, and it was very disturbing. But at first I was like, oh, are we just catching up? Like, did you just decide to start talking to me again? Or what, you know, there was nothing at first. But anyway, the point is, eventually it turned out, like, I think she eventually was able to, somebody was able to get her back on her meds. I wasn't close with her. So I tried to do everything I could. I was trying to like call friends and get in touch with anybody who might be close to her enough to know what to do. But she did say, I heard from a friend afterward that she did say after she got back on her meds, she was like, yeah, I thought my ex was making everyone do things. And like, somehow, like, he was like, mm-hmm. It's almost hard for us to even, if you don't have that, to even fathom, but it was really interesting to think about. Like, she thought someone was behind everything, like everything that was happening. There was like some agent, you know, that was her ex that was like making it happen and in that way, I can see the draw of that as a plot, you know, like in it's compelling. It's, you know, it's a bit horrifying. It's a bit, you know, it's interesting. It's fascinating. It's something that has conflict. And so how do you, like you say, there's no easy answer. How do you, do something like that? But when everybody starts doing that, then it starts to look like, okay, anyone with mental illness is like a dangerous person, which is not true. So how do you balance all that? You know?
Yeah. Funny enough, I'm thinking about Macbeth through all of this, right? Everything you're saying is sort of true all the way back to like Macbeth, the story of someone who seems to have an increasing amount of mental illness and like becomes increasingly violent and doesn't know, you know, starts getting increasingly paranoid and thinking everyone is out to get them. Like,
yeah, but back then they're like, well, it's just the witches.
It's just demons. You just got demons in the brain.
Demon mind, brain demons. Let's drain some blood out of your skull and hope it gets better.
So I think it's hard, right? And I do think that we don't want to say that you can't explore these issues and you can't explore mental illness. I just think that like there were ways that this one could have particularly been done better. And like to tie it back to my other pet peeve of tropes in this episode, it was the way they portrayed drug use and the relationship between drug use and suicide was incredibly frustrating in what felt at the beginning like it was going to be really optimistic for me. I love the Colin character, the Hunter S. Thompson-y kind of video game maverick drug user character. But to then go into the like jump off a building trope that people, you know, that always gets brought up with acid and like mixing that with the mental illness and like the issues of the quantum immortality that I think are particularly problematic when you try to feed that stuff to someone with mental illness, for example, right? You could easily imagine a cult of quantum immortality playing on people like Stefan. So I just, I wish that they had done a better job with that, because there was some really great stuff in that drug addict scene. There's some stuff that I want to talk about, like, especially After Dark, about like references and things. And it's just frustrating that the content didn't go as far as the references did. It just comes up shallow.
Interesting.
That
small thing about tying back to the my boringness with this. I got to that drug scene where he asks you whether or not you want to drop some acid, you know, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And my first thought was, this guy is on serious medication for mental illness. I'm not messing with brain chemistry. What are you doing?
So did you say no? So
Of course I chose no.
What happens in the world where you say no?
He drugs you. You didn't see that one? In the world where you say no, he drops the acid into your tea. No, for some reason, Thomas,
I never saw the timeline in which you don't say, when you say no to drugs.
Because you don't care about the fact that his brain chemistry is fragile.
Yeah,
you don't
I'm on Team Void. That's like, how do I find the worst possible ending for Stefan? The one I want to find the ending where he eats his father.
Well, there's that point in some of those video games where, like, you're like, all right, let's try to be the worst possible. Yeah. Just
I'm gonna go Grand Theft Auto on Stefan here and see how many hookers I can run over.
I wonder how bad this one gets. It just doesn't seem too hard to be pretty bad.
Yeah. So okay. So you didn't take the drugs, right? But he still drugs.
Yeah, but it
you
doesn't
anyway,
matter
because right?
he slips you the drugs anyway. So it gets you right back to the which. By the way, kind of undermines the whole thing. Because Colin is like, well, I wanted to give you the choice. And then, but he still drugs
well,
you.
Well, it plays into that thing that I talked about a little bit on the previous one, where it's like this whole thing is the illusion of choice, but really it's got a set number of endings and it's going to drive you towards them, right? It's like our friends who've set up their D&D group within our group on Facebook, and like any D&D dungeon master will tell you, right? It's always a game of like, how do I keep this constrained enough that I don't have to invent too much for not, you know, before the characters start to see the seams at the edge of the world? Like, you're always just trying to limit things down because it's impossible to generate that much content.
That's true. Although, quick shout out to, you know, it is cool that this is how seamless this was, you know, and like does such a good job. It's not like an awkward, you know, some of those early game versions, you know, you choose the chat option and like, and like hard cuts to like a different, it was cool technologically anyway, how they were able to do this and make it seem very, very connected. And like, it wasn't like you weren't making a choice, you know, like it was just part of the movie. So that was pretty cool.
The way that the option just popped up in a way that it never has before on Netflix. And you're like, you always had this option. And they're like, we've always had all the options. We're always been in
well,
control.
Well, if you have the right TV. If you have my TV, right, then you can't have any options. Unless you
somebody was having some issue with like one of the like companies that directly relates to Netflix, and they're like, it was like Chromecast or something like that, and it was just really you can't communicate with machines from your same company. You're like, you're telling my Alexa to get up and kill me right now, but you can't tell Chromecast how to do this thing properly.
Yeah. So tell us about drug use. How did this, we've got the mental health part, you know, we've raised some questions about that and about the representation of that, but what, I guess I'm not totally clear on the drug use part. Do you just want it to be a pro happy?
I mean, I guess I feel like they could have gone in really interesting directions with like the use of the drug gives you more control over the timelines or something, where you know, you started to see how the timelines were influencing each other early on when you messed up and had to go back, and at this point it like creates a connection between you and Colin where he helps you along to a really interesting ending or something. But instead it's like either you die and it ends and you have to go back, or he dies and it, you go on, but it doesn't really have that much impact. So it was just like I didn't feel like there could have been more exploration of like the Timothy Leary / Aldous Huxley, you know, doors of perception. Like, this could have gone there was that one moment where the special effect where Colin's eyes bugged out, right?
Yeah,
that was so cool. That was incredibly cool. And I like that they kept it restrained, but like, that was what I wanted this to evolve into, things that were more out there like that. And instead it felt like all the drug stuff immediately kind of went by the wayside. So I think there could have been more going on there. I just wanted more. And that's, I mean, I guess that's ironic, right? One of the possible ways that one of the points of this might be that we are always obsessed with wanting more from our content creators. And so we create Stefans, like, not just by our choices of making them go insane, but by our choice of demanding that our content be ever more complex, forcing our artists to generate more and more things, driving them insane. So, like, this could be another We're the Monsters kind of scenario.
Yeah, but I see what you mean about, and one of the, who knows, again, this, a lot of this starts with, I don't know, one of the timelines I got stuck on. was, because he says in the middle of his drug rant, which I thought, so Colin goes on a drug rant, to reset to that. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I thought it was humorous because it starts off saying stuff where you're like, okay, is he on to something within this world? Like, are we living in a world in which he's on to something real about this fake world? Mm-hmm. And then I thought it was funny because he just starts going off the rails. Like, eventually he starts saying, like, more wackier and wackier stuff, mm-hmm. to where you're like, oh, okay, no, he's just on drugs and saying wacky stuff. And I thought that was funny. And I thought, and I see what you're saying. Like, maybe the drugs could have had a different interaction with this world. But then, you know, as it ends, and I don't know if I don't think there was any choice to change how, like, does the drug scene always end with the balcony? Mm-hmm. And it must, yep. Right? Because I don't think there's another choice. Yep. Yeah. So that takes you to, that really does take you to a not satisfactory place in my mind. Like, if Colin truly believes in this quantum, you know, mm-hmm. immortality stuff, why does he need to be tripping on acid to do and say those things, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and anyway, another interesting thing is one of the things he spouts off in there with is, like, mirrors allow you to go change the past or something.
Yeah, mirrors, like, allow you to move through time.
Move through time. Yeah, like, what? It seems totally... not, it seemed like not one of the things that would apply to this world. That seemed like, okay, he's just spouting off. And then later on in a timeline, the main character goes through a mirror and, like, changes stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what? This is,
I don't know if it's a deliberate reference, but I guess I think everything is a reference to this. But again, our friend the Invisibles, the magic mirror that shows up in the Invisibles, that is the magic energy that connects the universe, is part of the system of time travel that works in that graphic novel. And there is a lot of that graphic novel in this episode in terms of the time, multiple timelines, Huxley drug use, expansion consciousness stuff. And, like, Colin's character looks really similar to the main character from that story. So I wonder if, like, that was where they were referencing when they decided to play that, to do the mirror thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So that was the one that you said the Matrix, mm-hmm. was.
Matrix also, right? Remember how he pulls the thing out of the mirror in the Matrix?
Right.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of,
it's all one timeline.
That's right. You gotta listen to all the timelines. there's one other sort of main segment philosophy thing that you mentioned a little bit on the last show that I thought would be good to bring in here. It's a little more positive, a little less critical of it, which is that it, in Black Mirror fashion, it plays with our idea of what it means to have a good ending, right? Like you were saying, what is a good ending? Which thing counts as a good ending? And I think that from a philosophical perspective is a very important question about what it means to lead a good life, right? How do you want your life to end up? Are you happy? Are you happier dying with your mother who you would otherwise spend your whole life miserable and unattached from? Or are you happier living a long life and accomplishing something, even if it means being considered a crazy murderer for the rest of forever? Mm. Like, what is good is really the weighting of irreducible kinds of values. Like, there's no situation where you find all the value that you want exactly the way that you want it.
Yeah, that kind of ties in with conversations we've had about I guess utilitarianism and other views. And I would say one of the most compelling things that I think you've, kind of points and philosophies that you've talked about on the show for me personally is I really don't know how you would possibly evaluate a life looking at it from that perspective. Like, are you better off, you know, branching off from not exactly what you were saying, but the similar question of, is a life better if it's miserable the entire time, but then at the end it's good? Or is it like if it's just an even keel the whole time, but there's no, like you start off pretty high in terms of life quality, but it's decreasing slowly the whole time. Like that would probably feel like one of the worst outcomes, you know, like, and I genuinely wonder, as you just said, like, is there any real way to, how do you judge that? I genuinely don't know, like, how you would judge what the good ending and the good life would be in that way.
Yeah, I do like the idea, the pluralist idea, that there could be multiple good endings, that, like, it, you know, to me, there are, I think what they were going for, if you look at, like, a chart, is, like, here's the tier of incomplete endings, and then here's the tier of sort of complete but unsatisfying endings, and then here's the tier of compromised but satisfying endings. So, like, you don't save your mother, but you get the satisfaction of not living out a life without her, or, like, you complete the game and some crazy stuff happens in the future as a result, but you have to kill your father in the process, right? There are these these trade-offs, but like,
I hate when that happens,
right? Yeah. You know,
as life's trade-offs,
I mean, in Black Mirror,
sometimes you gotta kill your father.
Pretty good.
And it's interesting because the endings involving, you know, the government spying on you, and again, it's sort of his drug rants, going back to that, does kind of cover the, you know, the gamut, is that the word, of everything in the endings. It's kind of funny how they do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the endings that are that, yes, your dad was actually hired by the government to watch you the whole time. Like, I have no interest in those. Mm. And it, because to me, there's nothing, like, that's not the show I care about. And
well, that's interesting because, like, you said you find it compelling. Like, you could see how these grand conspiracies are compelling, but you don't personally find it interesting, you'd say?
Well, I don't, if that's the show, you know, like, the different endings tell you different things about what this reality would hypothetically be that we're visiting here. And I think this is all down to personal preference, or maybe, again, maybe it's just a preference of what you would want a show like this to do. You know, you might watch an episode of The X-Files and you think, oh, this is fun to watch the battle against, you know, the deep government conspiracy, the deep state that, like, knows about the aliens. Or you might, and you might enjoy that just fine. And then you might watch a show that's like a more like a Downton Abbey type drama where it's, you know, it's about family dynamics and feelings, whatever. And, like, with these multiple weird endings, to me, it's like changing one to the other. It's like, do you want Downton Abbey to turn into The X-Files? And you're like, well, no, not really. I don't need that. You know, those are different things to me.
Yep.
And so, but that's a personal thing. Like, maybe if you're personally more interested in the, like, oh yeah, everything's a conspiracy and the deep state is drugging you and stuff, like, maybe that's what you're interested in. I don't know.
I think that's totally right. Right. Some people like the meta ending. Some people want the conspiracy theory ending. Me, I'm looking around for the Cronenberg ending every single time.
Yeah. Right?
Where's the one where they all burst into tentacles?
For me, if I were able to actually choose, we've established that I am boring. But in this thing, for me, what bothers me
was I supposed to
about
argue about
world...
you being? Should I have been like, oh no, Thomas, you're
no,
you're
that, don't
super
worry about it. No, don't worry. I know. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not a good person, so I probably missed that social cue. Yeah.
It's like that classic Simpsons where there's a burlesque thing, whatever. I haven't seen it for a million years, but they're showing the pictures of everybody who's caught, like, going to the burlesque show, and then Barney is pictured, and then Mo is like, not Barney, you know, like, as being the one person that decides, oh, shoot, I better react as though this is shocking. Yeah, that was like that. No, that's okay. I'm a boring person. Because for me, what I would love to choose my way out of is, maybe it's just how I am, but I don't like this world of unresolved conflict with the dad. You know, like, is that, how weird is that? I find it believable. I'm not saying it's, like, bad or anything, but I'm just saying, like, when you hand me the reins of your TV show, in the form of controlling choices. I want the choice that is A, push button A to reconcile with your father somehow, or push button B to just leave and never talk to him again. I want, those are the options I want. Mm-hmm. I don't want a constantly in a state of like kind of being mean to him and not accepting him, but also living with him and living, you know, like what? That's what I would love to. I know I'm a boring person, but that's, I care more about that issue in the plot than is he a government agent that is drugging me.
that may just be that you're a father now, and so you're like, I want to be reconciled. Could be. With. And so you're just expressing your preferences there.
Well, it's not that. It's that I want, I don't, this state of
the ambiguity, not, the Schrodinger's relationship there. You want it to either collapse.
I don't like this thing. Maybe it's just how I interpersonally, I don't know why the hell we're on this topic, but yeah, like, sorry to kind of divert to a weird topic, but I don't understand that as a person, I guess. I don't like to be in a relationship with anybody where there's a problem that nobody's talking about, but you're still doing like interacting together constantly, you mm-hmm. know? So Bandersnatch, give me the option to resolve that conflict is what I'm saying.
I'm not really, that's not really Black Mirror's brand. Like,
yeah,
not really what they're all about.
But it goes back to what you were saying about you can't have too many choices. Mm-hmm. I wish I had gotten to that timeline. Maybe I'll try to find a way to get to there in the show, because I do like that mm-hmm. idea that it's like, you realize, okay, you can't give infinite decisions. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
Thomas over here will be stuck in some boring family drama.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I don't want to spoil it too much. You can get there. It's messy, right? So your options are gonna get messy. It's my clue for you to get through the maze.
That's funny. Well, what else do we need to make sure to hit on the topic of mental health and drug use that you want to make sure, you know? I don't want to deprive you of the opportunity to talk about either of those two things.
No, I mean, I think I laid out the things that, like, the concrete examples of where I think this could go better on those subjects. And it's not, you know, it's not that you can't have mental illness. It's not the main character can't have mental illness. It's not that it can't be part of your unreliable narrator mechanism. I think it's just be more cognizant of the most possible common tropes that, like, often slip people, you know, send people off in the wrong directions, and like figure out a way to do your narrative that is still interesting and challenging and scary and horrifying without reinforcing those particular tropes. I guess that's my
point. I totally agree. And if I were to put a final button on one component of it, I think that what you highlighted really well, that I think is the most avoidable bad message in this show, is this idea that, like, you if you take your pills, you'll make a boring game, and it will limit you. I think that is a harmful and avoidable thing. You know, like, some parts of it might come down to, like, okay, well, you want an interesting story, so we're, you know, mm-hmm. yes, this might not be representative of everybody with mental health, but we're choosing our realities such that it'll be an interesting story kind of thing. But that feels to me like an avoidable thing. And for me and a lot of the, you know, artists that I know in terms of creativity, mental health, yeah, taking your pills is the best thing you can do. You know, mm-hmm. like, it's the key to creative success isn't, you know, being quote unquote crazy. That'll more often than not, in my experience, in my opinion, that will prevent you from being able to get anything done. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you need to be able to get, that's part of the creative process, is being productive and getting stuff done. And not taking your meds is sure a great way to jeopardize that, in my opinion, every situation is different. But I think that was a bad message. The message of, don't take your pills and then you'll make a more creative and great game. That's bad.
Right.
I don't like
We've
that.
Talked about substrate chauvinism on this show, right? The treating of certain substrates as being better or worse than others when it comes to conscious beings. But there is no worse form of substrate chauvinism than with regard to neurotransmitters, right? My favorite meme of all time says, if you can't make your own neurotransmitters, store-bought is fine, right? There is no difference. It's not a bad thing. It's okay. Please take your medicine.
Good point. It's all like nobody says that about what? Insulin or something.
Right. Store-bought is fine.
No, you need to, yeah. Store-bought, yeah. No, great point. I think you highlighted that well. So, let's go on to After Dark, but of course, first we have to tease next week. And Aaron, what are we going to be talking about next week?
Okay, for this time, for realsies, we're finally going to do this Star Trek episode. We keep bumping this.
Well, I mean, we already did it, but people chose a different timeline right. Where we didn't air it. So finally, though, you're on the right. Don't worry. We'll get it back together.
Right. Eventually, you'll reach that timeline. Quantum eventualities. Probably it's going to be fine. So we're going to be doing the Star Trek episode Half a Life, it's called. It is season 4, episode 22. It's one that you can watch without seeing too much stuff beforehand, though if you want to get a little bit of character backstory, watch episodes with Lwaxana Troi. She plays a major part in this episode and does an amazing job, but it's also got... what's his name? Ogden Steers from MASH in it. And it's a tearjerker. It's one of the tearjerker Star Trek episodes. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah.
All right. And also we've got to thank our top patrons. What are they going to make you say this time?
Yeah. And we have a new top patron for this week. We are up to 3 top patrons. So special thanks to... I remember a tube and being covered in goo, but I'll take your word. Aaron's inability to read names is influencing Thomas. I can't believe I messed that up. That's amazing. So good. And philosopher, I hardly know her. It's wonderful. Thank you all so much. Really appreciate the support.
All right, and we're going to hop on to After Dark at patreon.com/0G. Come join it. It really is worthwhile. That's when all the... It's let's face it, it's fun. It's uncensored. And in this episode, I believe Aaron is going to go take us deep into the Easter egg territory and tell us a bunch of stuff that I'm sure I didn't catch in this episode.
Yeah, we're getting super nerdcore.
All right, we'll see you over there. Everybody else, we'll see you next week.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/0G, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
There's this group of psychics who get caught in an attack and think they might be dead, and there's people who are half alive and people who are really alive. And in all of this, there's this stuff called Ubik that is this spray can that allows people to avoid death, sort of, in a weird way. But really, Ubik is this super weird metaphor for Philip K. Dick's obsession with this trans god-like person that he believed that he was in contact with.
This has been a burst transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/0G. You can find us on Twitter at @0GPhilosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.